We were watching the trailer for Cocaine Bear, which, I mean, how does that? It's everybody's really pumped for Cocaine Bear. This might be one of those. Bruno and I always talk about, like, communal moments.
Like Avatar, yeah.
You know, like, just communal moments where everybody's talking about the same thing, you know, whatever that moment might be. And Cocaine Bear might simply be one of those. That film is going to be excellent. We might do a, you know what we should do? We should do a show. I'll
on
pay.
On cocaine?
No, hold on. Wait, whoa. No. I think we should do a little show date is what I was going to say. I'll pay. I'll take everybody out. I'll get you all popcorns.
Oh, okay. We were on different.
We'll even invite Ray. go watch Cocaine Bear as a show. I think everybody might be down for that. Devlin, you down for that?
Oh, I'm going.
Yeah.
100% I'm going. You're going.
When movies market themselves as something kind of like insane, like I like it. Like when the Purge movies were taking themselves serious, that was awful. But when they were like, okay, we suck and we know it,
we're just
it was
crazy.
Better.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe Eric Hasseltine will want to come out there and watch Cocaine Bear with us. I think he might be up for that movie. Let's talk to him now. He's up in Minneapolis getting ready for the Grizz versus the Timberwolves. Eric, thanks so much for taking some time with us, buddy.
Cocaine Bear, huh? I'm hoping this is not a new Christmas trend. I don't need to find this for my son, do I?
No, this is a new theater film about a bear in the 80s that ate, like, a ton of cocaine, and they're making a movie about it.
Interesting. I'm sure that bear had a great time that night. Yeah, no doubt about that.
I'll send you the down night.
It was a high night for that bear.
Yeah, I'll send you the Google invite for the trip that we're all going to take to watch it.
Please do.
So let's talk about the cocaine-less bears, the grizzlies, that are getting ready to take on the Timberwolves up north. This season so far, I mean, there's been a little bit of scare. Obviously, John Morant took had the injury, but seems like he is 100% back from that.
Oh yeah, he's good. He's playing terrific basketball and getting to a spot where every night it's another show. And you know, it's a blessing to watch him on a nightly basis. I feel incredibly fortunate to have that opportunity, and the organization feels blessed that we got him, you know, in terms of this was what you can build around. This is something you've never had. You've had good teams here in the past, but never a star of this magnitude. And, you know, when you see celebrities in New York in our last game Sunday night, basically, you know, lining the court and all of them saying the same thing, is this guy for real? Because he makes ridiculous play after ridiculous play and then ends up with a triple-double and you win the ball game. I think that's the most important thing. The telling story to me, and I'm not sure if we've discussed this one, maybe we have, so if I'm repeating myself, forgive me, but early in the season, he had a chance to get 50 against Houston, and all he had to do was come in, take an inbounds pass, get free throws, and that's what happens. So, you know, if sorry, I'm getting my luggage to the truck here, fellas. And he denied it. And he said, you know, I'm not worried about getting 50. I'm worried about getting this win because Desmond Bane is a phenomenal free throw shooter. And it also, as we talked later on, was he knew that would help get Des going a little bit. And Des had been struggling the first couple ball games. That's the way this dude thinks. And it's not about him. It's not about getting his, which is so rare, you know, in terms of what we preach in society and in terms of sports fandom today. We want our stars to be stars, go get yours, but can you be a leader? And if you can, then you're a megastar, and that's what he is. He leads by example. He's the first one, you know, in terms of getting out there. When they have practices, he takes his same amount of workout time every time and puts in the work in the off season like very few I've ever seen. Now, people will say, well, when I was at the game, he was the last one to come out of the locker room. Yeah, he gets loose at a certain time and then comes out, gets stretched out, and he's ready to rock and roll. So this guy leads in every aspect by what he does on the court and off in terms of his work ethic. And just hearing him interact with his teammates, it's a genuine camaraderie that you just don't get very often with professional teams. I mean, it's not a knock on the team that they're playing tonight, but the last time the Grizzlies played the Timberwolves, we kind of looked around and said, it doesn't even look like they're having fun playing alongside one another. And that's never the case with this group. So very lucky to have him with us. And hopefully he can continue to stay healthy and keep doing the same things he's been doing. And they're awaiting the arrival of Desmond Bane. And then now they're going to await the arrival of Zaire Williams to make his debut when he comes off an injury. And there's a big sentiment that if this team is healthy, they have a legitimate shot to go very, very deep in the postseason and really make some noise in the West.
Well, he's leading points, he's leading assists, he's leading steals currently. Do you feel like, kind of from what you're talking about, Memphis is a small market team. That's just the real truth of it. But it feels like he's making it a large market team.
He is, and it's fun because you have more national television games than ever before. I mean, that's not always fun for our TV guys because they lose those games in their arsenal, so to speak. They don't get paid for those nights. But you know, to be put on Christmas Day against the team that you lost to in the postseason that won an NBA championship, that was a sign of respect. If you look at their schedule, I've talked about this a lot with people. They will face a much more difficult road ahead after Christmas Day. And people say, well, why is that? Like last year, the schedule was so hard in the first 20 and they were 9-10 going in and Ja got hurt and then they turned the corner. But those tests really got them ready to roll and all these other things. And I said, it's because everybody in the sports world knows that the public eye does not turn to the NBA really till around Christmas. So if you want the public eye to catch a glimpse of this hot, new, young team that they think is going to be around for the next 6, 7, 8 years, hopefully, then they're not going to start doing the marquee matchups in October when no one's really paying attention. They're going to do them in December, end of December, January, February, and into March when the eyes of the sports world are there and you can really see what this team's capable of. And yeah, being a small market team, that's a tough thing to battle through in certain aspects, but in other aspects, it's a benefit. You get that camaraderie, you get that it's us against the world mentality. And you know, just because teams are in big markets doesn't mean they're successful. I mean, when was the last time the Knicks made a deep run into the postseason? And you would think with their ability to go over the cap and where they play and the intrigue of New York, that should be a no-brainer. But it doesn't happen that way. And the Lakers right now, kind of in a mess, and they're, you know, the glitz and glam franchise of this league. But sometimes it's about good management and about putting pieces in the right places and getting the right coach. And that's all the things that this organization has done. I can't sing the praises enough of the front office for taking a situation that at one point seemed pretty hopeless. I mean, it was like, where is this going? You don't have a lot of draft picks. You kind of mortgage the future to make a run with that core four group. And then boom, lo and behold, you get one lucky night in the draft lottery and you don't make a mistake. And then on top of not making a mistake with that, they didn't make mistakes by making certain trades and then really doing their homework and getting guys that were available to, quite honestly, any team. You know, Brandon Clark was available to just about anybody. Desmond Bane was available to just about anybody. And they went out and got those guys, and they're two of the biggest factors with this group. Of course, with Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr., who the previous year was the fourth overall selection, those guys weren't available to everybody. But filling in the spots around them is what takes you from being a good team to a great team. And they have the potential with this system and this head coach and this coaching staff that has stayed together to be a great team for many years to come.
Talking with Eric Hasseltine, voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, getting set for tonight's Grizzlies and Timberwolves matchup. I want to talk about one of those spots as well that we're talking about. Steven Adams, averaging 11 a night right now, rebounds. I believe that's probably top 10 right now in the NBA currently. How important is it to have a guy like that around that nucleus of that younger talent, the guy who's been around for a while and is not afraid to get messy down low?
No, it's a blast. And look, it's nothing against Jonas Valanciunas, but a lot of people thought like that trade at the beginning of last season was one that was going to take the Grizzlies a step back, because here you had a very skilled, very capable scoring big man in Jonas, who was a double-double machine. We used to say he rolls out of bed, gets you a double-double. And that's great, and that's fantastic. But what Ja Morant and maybe Desmond Bane and even maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. needed was to have a guy that didn't need the ball in his hands, that didn't need to be a part of the offense early on, or else he really didn't feel like he was in the flow of the game, and who was maybe a little bit better of a rim protector. You know, Jonas is a really, really good player all the way around, but Steven's a little bit better defender, a little bit more physical, like you said. So on top of that, his personality is just infectious. This dude is just hilarious. You know, everybody talks about him looking like Aquaman. This is a guy from New Zealand that, if you want an interesting read, go look up his Wikipedia page. This dude is one of 18 children from a father who was an admiral in the British Navy. All of the men are 6'8 or above, and all of the women are 6'2 or above. Two of his half-sisters are Olympic champions in track and field, and this guy is on a path to nowhere after his father dies, and one of his brothers says, hey, I'm not letting this happen to you. You're not going to run the streets of, you know, New Zealand, where it wasn't an affluent part of the country, and run around with these gangs and just be kind of a waste of potential. You're going to go to this basketball school and you're going to see what you're capable of. And they bring him in, and next thing you know, he's in Pittsburgh, spends a season at the University of Pittsburgh, and then gets drafted in the lottery, and the rest, as they say, is history. He still goes back to New Zealand, has a farm, drives a big pickup truck. And I've told anybody that I've ever been asked about him, I was just like, I'm just happy the guy likes me, because he is terrifying when you're next to him. The first time I met him, he shook my hand. I looked down and my hand was gone because his hands are so big. I was like, can I have my hand back now, dude, please? And, you know, he just laughs about stuff like that. He wears just basic sweats and slides, and it's like 10 degrees in Minneapolis, and this dude's just walking out in a T-shirt and sweatpants and slides and a jacket. I'm like, bro, it's 10 degrees outside. He goes, oh, I know, mate. And it's this soft Australian accent that you don't expect. You almost expect the guy to kind of growl at you when he talks. And just an all-around awesome guy. And the players love him. He's got everybody's back. And you know, for a guy like Ja, who goes in and, you know, draws some attention and draws some ire from other players because he gets a lot of attention, and because he, you know, he is boisterous, and he is a little arrogant, and he is a little cocky when he makes plays that nobody else can make. And I'm like, well, you know what? I would be too if I could jump through two guys, hang in the air, spin it off the window, and not only make the shot but take contact and get an and one. I would probably flex a little bit too. And the best example of that was last year when Tony Bradley, who's 6'11" and 260 pounds, and Ja got tangled up, and Ja took exception to it, and Bradley wouldn't let go of him, and you know, Ja was trying to get him off of him, push the ball at him, and, you know, these are the things that happen sometimes. And Steven Adams basically picked up a 260-pound, 6'11-inch human being, and the guy looked back at him, looked almost like he was ready to fight, saw who it was, and just went ragdoll. I mean, just ragdoll right in his arms. And he carried him 30 feet to the sideline, and on the air, I said, I think in 21 years, I don't think I've ever seen that, nor do I think I ever will again. That's ridiculous. But that's the kind of guy he is. He's so unselfish at times. You want to yell, like, dude, you've got to dunk. Just dunk the ball. But he's trying to pass and make plays and get everybody involved. And I think that speaks a lot to who he is. He's all about winning. The day he got to Memphis, he told the coaching staff, I am so happy to be here and have this opportunity. Anything you need me to do, you just say the word and I'll do it. And that's why they rewarded him with a contract extension this offseason.
Talking with the voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. They're getting set against the Timberwolves tonight, 7 p.m. tip-off. You'll hear Eric Hasseltine on the call starting 6:30 here on Nashville Sports Radio. Bruno Reagan, what do you got for him?
Yeah, Eric, I'm a guy that follows trends. I mean, especially in football. Kirk Cousins on primetime, follow that trend every time to the bank, straight to the sports book. Andy Dalton in primetime, straight to the sports book. When Ja plays, right, he gets a triple-double. Grizz are 6-0. Are there any other trends that you can pick up on the Grizz that kind of, you know, predict their win and loss going into a game or at halftime?
Wow. I will say this, and this was last year. There's a couple. One, when this team shoots 45% or better in the last two seasons, they're virtually unbeatable. And you know, of course, everybody's going to go, okay, no kidding, dummy. Like, thanks, mm-hmm. Captain. Obvious, you make shots, you win games. 45% is fairly pedestrian. You know, it'd be one thing if I said 50%. And at 50% this year, they're I think, 8-1. But 45% last year, they were like 24-2, which is between 45 and 49. That means not only are you not necessarily torching the Nets, but you're either D'ing up real hard or you're just continually putting pressure on your opponent. So that's one. So anytime you see them playing a team that defensively ranks towards the bottom of field goal percentage, there's a good chance that the Grizzlies are going to find a way to exploit that. The one that caught me over the years was when Dylan Brooks scored 20 or more in a game. I think one year they were like 24-1 or 24-2. When he's productive, that's big. Now, I don't know what that trend would look like now with Desmond Bane kind of emerging as the secondary scorer, and you still have Jaren and now you have Dylan, whereas before he was clear cut, either your second or second A option if Jaren had it going. So to me, yeah, trends wise, I think on days in Minnesota when the snow falls west to East, take the Grizzlies in the, and lay the points. I'm giving you my best guess as I'm trying to dodge snowflakes out here. But, look, they're a fun team to watch. And I understand that people that are into the gambling thing, we obviously as employees of the team can't be into the NBA gambling. And I love putting a little, you know, a little money on a football game here or there and making it more interesting. This team, when they're playing the way they can just go for big numbers. And I think as you see this team progress and continue to get better defensively, although they didn't necessarily show that Sunday against the Knicks, when they get fully healthy, and Zaire Williams will be a big part of that too, because he really helps in with the second unit defensively, you're going to see them, I think, hold opponents under their number a lot more often than opponents are going to get above what maybe the odds makers think they would score that night. I would start looking as this season progressed for that defense to continue to improve and start looking for opponents' totals to go on the underside.
Eric, I'm going to be in Memphis from March to June. Are we going to Beale Street? Are we going to have a night out?
For March to June? Did you lose a bet or something? What happened there?
No, there's going to be a new football team there, so I'm going to go play there for a few
months. Yeah. The old USFL. Are you working for that group, huh?
Yeah, I'll be in Memphis. So
he's going to be an offensive lineman for that group.
I'm going to be a big old boy.
There you go. Yeah, you're putting me on the spot with that one. I will tell
you, you don't have to say anything.
Like, it's kind of like New Orleans. Bourbon Street is not where the locals hang out. Now, yeah. You want some good spots, I got you covered. I would say off of Beale. There are some fine establishments on Beale, but I'm on the fifth floor of life now. I turned 50 in September, so I prefer a good whiskey on a big ice cube and a little bit more quiet environment than the techno dance vibes that I was never good at anyway. So at 50, I'm probably really bad at it now. So. That's great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Showboats being there and being able to hopefully take my son out to a game or two. It'll be a lot of fun.
I have to get you a Bruno Reagan jersey.
Good. Yeah. My whole thing for the team is trying to be entertaining and out of pocket and win, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, winning's a big
sign. That was a wild turn of events because we were just kind of bouncing around, and I know last year they played all the games in Birmingham, and you know, I grew up in Oakland. I was an Invaders season ticket holder. They had Bobby Hebert and Anthony Carter and they were the year before that they had Fred Bassana, who was a solid quarterback, and a lot of those guys went to the NFL, and I loved that league. So seeing all the retro uniforms was great. I was kind of disappointed. I liked their logo, don't get me wrong, but I like those old Showboats logos with the red and the silver, and you still see people wearing those shirts around. So I think a lot of people in Memphis are pretty excited about this. I mean, it's not, let's be honest, it's not going to draw 45,000-50,000 a game, but they'll get good crowds out there for spring football.
Eric, we appreciate you taking some time with us and talking before the game tonight. Remember, you're going to be able to hear him 6:30 on the call here on Nashville Sports Radio. Eric, have a good call tonight.
Always a pleasure, guys. I'm going to go in where it's at least 65 inside and not 12 outside, where I was trying to keep away from all the hubbub of the arena. But that's how much I wanted to do this. I just stood outside for you in the cold and chatted up with you. It was fun.
Hey, we appreciate the extra effort, Eric. We always do. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks.
Eric Hasseltine, voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah.